We're coming up on 3 o'clock in time now for Arts Live and Local. I'm David Paul in for Carol Newman this week. A lot of events coming up this weekend. We're going to talk about several of them in the upcoming hour. You know, we're very fortunate living where we do. We have incredible natural beauty and a lot of incredibly talented artistic people, and the two of them are going to come together this Sunday for Sunday in the Park with Art, the park being the Lewis and Clark National Historical Park. It's the brainchild of Marco Davis, performance artist, dancer, chef, masseur, bon vivant, raconteur, luminary. Did I forget anything? And he's here to talk about it, along with Jill Harding, who's the Director of Visitor Services at the Lewis and Clark National Historic Park. Thank you both for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
So, Sunday in the Park with Art. Marco, what's it all about?
Well, it takes place on the Quisquis Trail out at Fort Clatsop, and we did the first one in September. It was kind of I had been taking walks out there for a few years and was just inspired by the beauty, and it kept speaking to me in a lot of ways. Like, I'd have moments of visualizing different people or artists or musicians performing out there. And
on the trail.
Yeah. And so I ran into Kathy Peterson and Carla Cole at the Voodoo Room one night and asked them if it would be a possibility to do an art hike experience out there.
Both employees out at the park.
Yeah, and they said it jives exactly with what the park is looking for, and so we had some meetings. I met with Jill out there, and we set a game plan to make it happen.
So what did that involve? What was involved with that first event?
A lot of inviting different friends in the area that are installation artists, performance artists, musicians, dancers, and asking them if they would like to come out and participate on this adventure. It's kind of an improv score in a big way, because you don't know what's going to happen till the day of, because we come in and set up and try not to disturb the beauty of the nature around us and leave without a trace. So it's kind of, we come in and flutter around with the magic of the forest and are there for a few hours and then leave as peacefully as we come in.
It's kind of almost like the Tibetan monks and their sand mandala.
Yeah, where totally.
They have these incredibly intricate designs, and then at the end they just face it all and it's gone.
Yeah.
How the logistics of that, though? How do you do that? Not everybody can be doing. You mentioned there's going to be performance art. There's art installations. There's music. I imagine there's probably dance too.
Yeah. Three different dance things are happening, and it's just a lot of walking the trail and just seeing what works where and who wants to participate, and being open to the fact that it can shift at any moment, you know, just like you don't know what the weather's going to be like. You don't know. Last year we had several people that weren't able to make it, and so there were just kind of not holes in the program, because we'd never done it before, so you didn't know what to expect. But still, there's always variation within the theme.
Now, for performance artists, they can't all be doing it at once, I wouldn't imagine.
No, we're planning on trying to, this time through, we're starting it at the visitor center at the picnic area, and we're going to have groups going every 15 or 20 minutes so that it's not like a steady stream of people going the whole time. So it gives the artists a little bit of a break in between things.
So one group of visitors or audience members or hikers or whatever you would call them, participants, they would go through. And how long does it take to go through about the whole?
It's about an hour and a half with stops and starts and all of that.
And then in about 15 minutes later, another group would go through.
Mm-hmm.
And then another, another.
Yeah.
And how many groups do you anticipate will
We have no idea. We had a little over 100 people come out for the one in September.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping that anywhere from 100 to who knows how many.
Hopefully at least 100.
At least 100. Now, how did you get involved with it, Jill?
Well, after Marco approached Kathy and Carla, then they brought it to the park, and our team at the park, we started talking about it, and, you know, does it fit? Does it not fit? Does it something that we can, you know, how do we do this? And so, and then I just loved the idea, so I said, hey, I'll help with it. So I jumped on and helped out. And then this year, we also have the park has another big event, the Bio Blitz, this following weekend. So we kind of had to divide and conquer, because we wanted to make sure the Art Walk does a great job, and we have the Bio Blitz. So we kind of divided our staff and figured out who's going to handle what, and said, I'll do the art in the park. So I'm very excited.
Now, what were the criteria used to evaluate a project like this?
It's, you know, if it fits the theme of the park, and the great thing that's happening in the parks, all the national parks right now, is we have this initiative of healthy parks, healthy people, and encouraging people to get out and walk. We've been, our superintendent has been working with the local hospitals, Columbia Memorial and Providence Seaside, to have prescriptions for people to get out and walk in the park. And this whole idea of art in the park was just another piece, another way for people to get out and experience, get outdoors. And I'm going to let Marco talk about it, because he says it the best way about how you get out and get refreshed out in the outdoors. I mean, I don't know. Your wording is just the best,
you're so
and I
sweet.
Just love it.
Well, but it's true, you know. Being in nature is that one thing that kind of can balance out our being and kind of lift us out of the gray a little bit. There's something about the way that the forest kind of communicates with the cells in our being that kind of get them all alivened and, in I don't know, energized and ready to kind of... I always feel much more optimistic than I usually do after a nice hike in the forest.
I lived in the Far East for a couple of years and in Taiwan, and they said it's like taking a green shower.
Oh,
when you're
I
out in
that
the forest. A green shower, cleansing and rejuvenating.
Yeah. And it is. And you can watch it on... That was one of the things that I took away most from the hike in September, was witnessing the participants that came out to walk it and just seeing them just burst with light and love from getting to be a part of what was happening out there. It was really an overwhelming experience.
Now, how many artists do you have participating this year?
There's about 50, give or take. We've had a couple of people that are like, oh, we're not going to be able to make it out, and other people that are like, oh, we want to come. So it's been shifting a little bit.
It's kind
bit.
Of been in flux.
Yeah, yeah. And that's part of that improv score that I was mentioning. It's like you really, and you can't hold on to anything, and I think that's the beautiful thing about being in nature, is that you get to witness it, but you don't really get to hold on to it. And we're contributing to that and getting to be a part of the larger picture of our environment on Sunday, being out there doing this. So
now, what kind of art installations and what kind of performers can somebody expect to see out at the park?
Oh, there's a lot of different stuff. With this time around, Kristen Schock's basic design class up at the college is participating. So we have a lot of upcoming artists in the area that are doing art to bring out there and share. So I'm excited to see what they're going to contribute. And then we have Jessamine Grace, who's...
The Day of the Velvet Voice.
Yes, exactly. And she'll be out there doing some of her gorgeous dancing. And Cameron Wagner. And
Jessamine is a belly dancer.
Yes.
For those who don't know.
Yes.
And
then
very good one.
A very good one. And then Cameron Wagner and her friend Kat and Cameron's husband Derek are going to be doing a little dance performance out there, kind of in the spirit of Buto, which is a Japanese form of dance. And then I have some friends from Eugene coming up that are contact improvisation dancers, and they're going to...
What's that?
Contact improv is one of the most amazing forms of dance. It's about the rolling point of touch and how when you connect with someone, how you share that space and communication. And so it's a lot of lifting and rolling and in and out of the ground. It's just, it's one of the most beautiful things. It's difficult to explain. It's one thing that brought breath back to my life, learning how to trust another person, mm-hmm. and to be a part of that without any planning or expectations, just to be in the moment.
Wow. And yeah. What kind of music? I imagine
oh, there's a lot of different people. Derek Moore is going to come out and play guitar, and Skylar is going to play some keyboard. Zach Stanton might be playing some violin. We have other artists that are coming out. I don't want to give it all away.
No, then be nothing. Just whet the appetite a little bit. Yeah. Now, you mentioned Leaving No Trace. So this is going to be a one-day event.
Yes. Just from 2 to 5.
From 2 to 5.
The last tour will start at 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. And so I imagine that the artists and the participants will have to get prepared, set up.
Yeah. And that's part of it, too. You have to carry your stuff in. So that is another contributing factor to what am I going to bring to this event. And it's pretty exciting watching everyone arrive and come out and get their places set up and... just feel the excitement in the area. And then this Sunday, I'm also doing the talk at the fort at 1 o'clock for the In Their Footsteps.
And what are you going to talk about?
About the whole art hike experience and just my process and journey and getting to... get to have this happening and stuff, and so just a little more in depth.
Now, Jill, are you going to take the hike?
Yes, last year I wasn't able because because it was all new, and so you kind of, you know, with new events you always go with the flow, and even old events you go with the flow. And so I wanted to make sure a lot of the other staff, a lot of my staff got out, and volunteers got to see it first, and then it was time to pack up.
The saddest part was that Jill and Kathy didn't get to do the hike at all last year. So Kathy's going first, no matter what. Do you hear that?
You've been put on notice, Kathy.
Yeah, she's going to do the first walk.
Now, are all your volunteers in place, or are you looking for any more volunteers to pull off this event?
Well, in theory, they're all in place, but you never know. Because
there's that state of flux you were talking about.
That secret language of volunteers, you know, something better might come up.
Now, Jill, is this a guided tour? Are there going to be people shepherding the groups through?
In theory.
Well, the trail is very well... I mean, if we don't have enough folks to shepherd other folks through, the trail is very well marked, and we will have folks stationed... rangers and other folks stationed along the way, so you can't go in the wrong direction.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. No, not this way.
Yeah. No.
Not off in those bushes.
Yeah. Right. Well, I guess you could, but...
Come back.
And we have an abbreviated walk with it as well.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, for those that don't necessarily want to do the full hike, we're going to have a shorter loop that ends just before it goes into the full Quisquis, so...
Okay, and about how, what are that, we talking
that
about?
That one's
for
about
length?
A little over a mile.
A little
and
over a mile.
And then the full hike is a little over 3 miles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's Sunday. Now, as far as taking everything down and leaving no trace, how is that going to happen?
It just does.
It's magic.
It's magic. It's just like that line in Shakespeare in Love, you know? It's a mystery.
I would imagine there are some park personnel that are involved in that.
A little bit. We do we will be having vehicles there, so mm-hmm. we get them as close as we can to their station. But the Cuis itself is, it's a trail, so you do mm-hmm. have to pack things in, pack things out. And we do have a couple of wheelbarrows, but they really don't fit on all parts of the right. trail either. Right. So
it's a lot of it is done by hand. Now mm-hmm. it's a family-friendly event, I imagine.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that was so fun for the one in September is the participants actually came ready for an adventure, and a lot of kids were dressed up in costumes.
Oh, really?
Yes, it was very exciting.
What were some of the costumes in it?
We had one gal that wore this amazing crow costume.
Oh, really?
And then there were other kids that were dressed as superheroes with their capes on.
And fairies.
Yeah. And a unicorn or two.
A unicorn or two, yeah. So costumes are encouraged. Always encourage. How about our four-footed friends? Can they come on this art walk?
As long as they're well-behaved and leashed, yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. So family-friendly, pet-friendly.
Yeah.
Is it free or?
With the admission to the park.
With admission to the park. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And 1 o'clock is when you begin your footsteps.
Yep. In the visitor center. And then 2 o'clock is when the first tour starts.
And last tour goes out at?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
Yeah.
So this Sunday, 1 o'clock, Marco is going to give his In Your Footsteps address. 2 o'clock is when you get to go out on the Cuis Trail and see what you can find out there in the way of art. Sunday in the park with art.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, Marco Davis, and Jill Harding, thank you so much for stopping by, and maybe we'll see you on Sunday out there.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks.
And next, it's rainy here, and it's about time for Rain Magazine once again, and we'll be talking to a couple of the student producers of that publication. Stay tuned. A little bit of Eric Satie there, Gymnopédie number 1 and 3, usually paired together. Rain Magazine, well, I mentioned we had a lot of artistic talent here in the Columbia Pacific region, and some of it goes into Rain Magazine. It's a student-produced publication that comes out every year, produced by students at Clatsop Community College. And here to talk about Rain Magazine is Alex Audio and Saga Fryer. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
And this is a product of Writing 270, a class up at Clatsop Community College, is that correct?
Yep, that's right. So we had two professors this time. We had Allison Ruck and
Lucian Swirldoff.
Yeah. Oh, yes, Lucian, uh-huh.
So Allison took over the more like the proofreading and writing section, and then Lucian went over the more graphic design mm-hmm. part, like
the layout.
Yeah, figuring out mm-hmm. where things actually went in the book.
Now, you do everything, is that correct? The students do absolutely everything, every aspect of producing this publication.
Yeah, in a way.
What does that involve?
Yeah. Yeah, the faculty, they facilitate us and they do a lot of the work as well, you know, guiding us. But yeah, the students, we do the graphic design and the editorial process and the proofreading and yeah, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, so Alex and I were kind of proofreaders. I think we were the main proofreaders, right?
Yeah.
So, but everybody was supposed to do a little bit of everything. So we did also a little bit of like graphic design. We gave suggestions. We actually had to do a little bit of every different thing that went into making a magazine, but then we also were assigned a main job to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So step by step, what goes into the production of a magazine like Rain?
Well, we have to start out with the submissions.
Yeah.
So we have a submission period, and it's a couple of months. And at the beginning of class, what we did, I think, was we got all the submissions, and then we had, at first, all the students read through all of them, and then we would give them, assign them a score. And depending on what the score was, if it was a 3 or higher, generally, out of, I think it was 4?
Mm-hmm.
Then,
so the scale of 1 to 4.
Yeah. Then if we had 3 or higher, then it would go into the magazine. And then if it was under a 3, then we would talk about it a little mm-hmm. bit more.
Mm-hmm. And did every student have to do this? Have to read each submission, piece?
And one important thing to note, too, was the submissions were anonymous as well. So,
oh, were they?
Mm-hmm. It would be surprising after we were done with the editorial process, we found out the names of the authors, and you'd be surprised, you know, at the outcomes sometimes, which would be a little interesting.
Mm-hmm. So if a well-known author, local author made a submission, you wouldn't know it was by that well-known local author.
Exactly. So the submissions stand on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the reputation wouldn't prejudice your your selection.
Yep. Right.
How many submissions did you have? How many did you have to go through approximately?
I think it was 300?
And this is just written submissions, correct?
Yeah,
just written. We probably had a few hundred art submissions as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
A few hundred?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh,
my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to pour through all of these, assign them a score, and then from that, cull what you were going to put into the publication.
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, you've got some pretty well-known local writers.
We do.
We were coming in. Who were some of them?
Yeah, well, some of them that made the cut without us knowing it.
Of course.
was Robert Michael Pyle, Wayne Downing, Florence Sage.
Our own Wayne Downing.
Yeah, yep. There was a lot of good people. Some of the great artists we had was like Sterling Gorsuch
mm-hmm.
and also Robert Paulman. He's the guy on the cover.
Oh, yes.
It's a beautiful cover this year with the Aster column on the top. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and then of course there's a couple of less well-known mm-hmm. people like myself and Alex.
You're in there.
Yeah.
And Alex is in there.
Some student contributors.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now there's going to be a reception, kind of a kickoff event.
Yep, that's right. We're going to have a little party. So that's May 20th. That'll be at the college. So we're having it in Towler Hall on the second, no? I can't.
Second floor.
It's really hard to remember what floor is what. It's the top.
I think it's the,
floor.
The top third floor. Third floor
yes.
commons.
Yeah. I think
is that
the
right?
Third floor commons. Yeah.
And what can we expect to see there?
Well, we will have people coming in and performing their pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So our a little shout out to our professor Allison asked us to remind people who did want to come in and give a reading of their submissions or display their art, which we'll also have easels that will have art put up around the commons,
mm-hmm.
that the event starts at 6:00, but if you do want to come in and read your piece, you should arrive at about 5:30 to sign up.
Mm-hmm. So this is 6:00 on the 20th.
Yep.
That's right, yeah.
The third floor commons of Towler Hall.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, where can people get a hold of this year's edition of Rain magazine?
Yeah, well, they could, for one, they could go to the college, and we have a lot of editions that will be available in the library, the college library up there, but as well as lots of local stores and businesses around Astoria will have the copies of the Rain magazine as well for free, I think. So
for free?
Suggested donation, but yeah, they're available for free. So Street 14 Coffee, for instance, would have something like that, or the Colombian Cafe.
Is there a place people could go to find some of the locations that are offering where they're available?
Honestly, I don't know, but you could contact Allison Rook. We do have an email for her. It's aruch@clatsopcc.edu.
Now, in producing Rain Magazine, and being in writing 270, is that's the class?
Yep.
Now, what all did you learn now? No, do you feel prepared to go out and put together your own zine or your own, say, graphic novel or anything like that, or a literary journal or anything of that sort?
Well, I do think it's given us a strong foundation. Yeah. I had no idea what actually happened in creating a production like that. There's so much more work than I thought going into that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I feel pretty confident that I could go out and I could, you know, if not start something up, then definitely join a team and know basically what I was doing.
Now, is Writing 270 open to any Clatsop Community College student?
It should be.
I believe so. There may be some prerequisites, but it's open to all students.
Now, the submissions, obviously, the 2016 edition is been put together. It's been printed, it's been bound, it's ready to go. You're going to roll it out on the 20th up at Toller Hall and on top of the hill. Submissions for the 2017 edition, when's that going to happen? When local writers can start thinking about that and local artists?
I think that opens in the fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everyone start writing now. Get started now.
Get that first draft out, start editing and rewriting and pondering and get out the brushes, get out the pens.
Yeah. So what Rain Magazine takes in will be only previously unpublished works.
Mm-hmm. Original.
Unpublished works. Has to be original.
Mm-hmm. It cannot have appeared anywhere else.
Right.
Yeah, which is one difficulty we experienced a few times.
Oh, is that right?
In this edition, we found some works that were beautiful works, but they had already been published somewhere, and we were very saddened to not be able to publish them in our own. But yeah, we want to make sure that our material is fresh and, vivid to the public, so not something that's already been done. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, is a... Writing 270, putting together the Rain Magazine, is that a one-shot thing? Is it once you take the class, you can't take it again, or can you repeat the class again and again?
We actually had one student who said she had finagled her way into taking it again.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that if you did want to take it again, you could.
Okay, well, again, when is the event?
We've got May 20th at Clatsop Community College, Toller Hall, 3rd Floor Commons at 6 o'clock.
Okay, and if you want to read, if you have your material in Rain Magazine, get there at 5:30.
That's right.
Well, Alex Audio, Saga Fryer, thank you so much for stopping in and talking about Rain Magazine.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Us.
Yeah.
And you're listening to Arts Live and Local here on Coast Community Radio, 91.9 KMUN in Astoria, 89.5 KTCB in Tillamook. We're streaming live on the web at coastradio.org. We'll have a brief musical interlude. And then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Stone Girls Dreaming. Stay tuned. Thank you. And here are some events this weekend. It's a very busy weekend in our area. The Dessert Readers Theater production of Hamlet 2 will be performed at the Esser Street Playhouse through the 14th. That's coming up tomorrow at 7 p.m. at the Esser Street Opry Company. The Shakespeare Sonics, Songs, Scenes, Scholarship event. That's been rescheduled to 7 p.m. Saturday, May 14th at the Cannon Beach Book Company at 130 North Hemlock Street, Suite 2 in Cannon Beach. And two of the of Czechoslovakia's, or the Czech Republic's, greatest composers, Dvorak and Smetana. Music will be performed 7 p.m. Friday, that's May 20th, at the Astoria Performing Arts Center at 588 16th Street, and again on 3 p.m. Sunday, May 22nd, at the Rockaway Community Church, 400 South 3rd in Rockaway Beach. Musica Maestro presents In the Modern Style, sonatas for two violins from early 17th century Italy. That's coming up on this Sunday, May 15th at 3 p.m. at Grace Episcopal Church at 1545 Franklin Avenue in Astoria. And the 2016 Clatsop Community College Student Art Show is now on display at the Royal Nebaker Art Gallery up at the college on top of the hill in Astoria. The AAUW, American Association of University Women, will host a panel discussion on the importance of art in education. That's going to happen 5:30 p.m. Tuesday, May 17th at the Astoria Library, 450 10th Street. And the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum will host a special exhibit, Beyond the Point, Contemporary Napping and the Object, May 13th through July 13th. The museum is at 115 Southeast Lake Street in Ilwaco. And we're back. Well, the conflict between Israel and Palestine is one of the most intractable political struggles in the world. It's been going on for years. It's counted thousands of lives, affected tens of thousands more, and with no end in sight. And this Saturday at the Performing Arts Center, Napa High School is mounting a production that will make you think twice about this conflict. It's titled Stone Girls Dreaming. And here to talk about it, director Jan Johnson and Janessa Salban. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jan, give us a synopsis of this play.
It's the Second Intifada, which I never even knew what that word was before I'd read.
Uprising, struggle.
Exactly. So it's Palestine, Israel. The story features two young girls, one who wants to be a photojournalist and one who wants to be a journalist. So one's doing photography, one's doing journalism. But one is Israeli and one is Palestinian. So the play really wraps around their perspectives and overlaps that they are both people and not everybody's bad in this war and what's going on. And Aisha, who has a friend named Ahmed, who is an artist, and he's trying to portray his view of and giving a memorial of the people who have died. So he creates these figures to represent those characters.
And this is the Palestinian?
The Palestinian mm-hmm. friend. Then the Jory, who is played by Janessa.
And she's Israeli.
Yes.
Israeli, and a friend of Rebecca, who is the photographer. Jory ends up having to join the army and to be a soldier. So creating a conflict in there as to why do you have to do this? It's scary. How is that going to help? And what am I going to do? Maybe Janessa can speak to that a little bit in her role
just
in that.
About my character. Well, I feel like my character's like just kind of going with whatever the leaders of Israel are saying. So, you know, I joined the army because I feel that the Palestinians are the enemy. I have a lot of, like, I'm scared and, like, Rebecca, who's my friend, she doesn't agree with me on what I believe, which is, you know, Palestinians are the enemy and I need to fight against them. So,
like, so you're much more militant, I guess.
Yeah. When she's, and my friend's the one who's trying to create peace, she wants the peace to come, and I'm the one that wants to fight. So it's, yeah.
And the different ways of fighting. And then Aisha has an encounter with a woman who is seeking suicide bombers.
Oh, really?
So then she's got to make a decision, and she tries to slough her off and go with her friend who's trying to do a peaceful memorial. But then something happens that causes her to change her mind at the end.
So these two young women and the characters in the play, they're being torn in different directions over this conflict.
And fighting about war. I mean, about land. You know, whose land is it? Whose originally was it? Who's supposed to be there? And why they have to be here in our place? And why, you know, not anybody totally understanding what the whole, even when they're in the middle of it, not understanding the whys, you know, and having the passion of trying to, what can I do as a teenager that's going to help this situation?
Now, Jan, how did you find out about this play?
It was in a dramatics magazine several years ago. I had done a few scenes of it with another drama group before, back when my daughter Sydney was in high school. And it had intrigued me just because it was deeper than just entertainment. So I did want to do it again. It also has references to refugees. Mm-hmm. And then it got me thinking about how could we relate or do something with refugees in Oregon. So I looked on the internet, found IRCA, which is an immigrant refugee community organization. And we took a field trip to the site there, where four of their employees talked to us about their organization, what they did there.
Oh, where is Portland?
In Portland. Uh-huh. In Portland. So, and then we went from there to David Douglas High School, where another woman named Najin, who was a teacher of refugee students in an after-school program, who helped them with their language and helped them get situated within the school, learn their way around, find, just basically become part of America.
Now you say we. Who was included in that?
My high school drama students.
So went. Everybody went up there.
So, unfortunately, she was not able to go that day.
Yeah.
So we, it was interesting because we live in a pretty white society.
Well, yep.
Napa mainly is pretty white. And our experiences with people of color is very limited. So this was interesting when we went in to begin with, and all of my students were seated in with the employees. And one of the men who works there is Tongan. And he walked in and kind of gave a double take, like, oh, this is the first time I've been around all. And then he didn't want to be politically incorrect. Right. And I said, all white faces. And he said, yeah.
Thank you for saying that for me.
So it was kind of fun for them, too, I think, as well. One of the workers was Somalian, mm-hmm. and she helps to get families situated and enrolled in school. What clothes do they need? Where are they going to have housing? This organization helps with situation getting them for jobs and job training. So one of the questions I asked when I was there was, okay, say I'm living in a place that is so horrible that I absolutely have to leave. I cannot stand to have my family here anymore. I fear for their safety. I don't know, you know, what's going to happen in my future. What are the steps I have to take? And they said, first of all, there's just mounds of paperwork and documentations that get sent to the UN. Then the UN has to approve that. Then you have to come up with a plane ticket and a location that you're going to go. If you have family members who live in a certain place, like Portland or whatever, mm-hmm. you're more likely to go there. If you don't, your then family could be split up anywhere. So you could have two of your family in one city, three someplace else. Oftentimes, the husband or father has to stay back for either political reasons or who knows what. So then they're separated from that part of their family as well. So once they get here, then they have to be sponsored. In Portland, there are three different, there's Catholic Charities, there's a Lutheran organization, and another, I'm not sure, another non-denominational or something organization that sponsors families to come. And then they help also to help get them situated in housing and different places like that. So that was just really, when people are saying, oh, we don't want, you know, all of these Syrians to come over, whether they're all going to be terrorists or whatever, it's highly unlikely that that's going to happen because of all the things they have to go through to be able to get here. So when we went to the high school, we were able to, we played games together and got to know each other and, you know, icebreaker things and whatever, so that was kind of fun. But then we broke down into small groups and talked about, you know, why did you come here? What did you, you know, what are the hardships of being here? What do you like about here? What are your dreams? You know, most of these kids have at least two languages under their belts, and now they're learning English. So there is a total immersion program. Once they get into the high school, they have to do everything in English. So all of their studies, their science, their math, their everything has to be in a language they don't know. And then, but I was surprisingly, they spoke very well. Some of them had only been there a year or two, and it was really, and these were kids from Somalia, Iraq, Taiwan, Congo. What else? There were just all over the place. Just kids from all over the place. So it really made a connection. It was just really a neat thing to say, hey, first of all, there's reasons why people are here, other people are here, and there's things that made the world smaller, you know? We got to find out about other people that nobody would have encountered maybe at another time.
You know, now emotions run pretty high on both sides of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In a play like this might stir some of those emotions up. You know, people come in with preconceptions and pretty strong opinions about it. Did that ever give you pause?
Well, we actually, also we had Omri came and spoke with us, and this with being our class, came this Omri of O'Falafel.
Omri of O'Falafel, in case you don't know him, he is from Israel and was a member of the Israeli army.
And yeah, we had some strong emotions when he was telling us the history of, you know, Israel and the whole conflict about that. That was strong emotions, yes.
Now, how do you prepare for a role like this, Janessa?
Parts of it are hard, aren't they?
They are, because, first of all, I've never gone through any of this, obviously. And I had, you really have to, like, dissect your character to find out what how they're feeling about the situation that's happening, and like that's kind of how it was for me. I really had to understand, okay, why is my character feeling this way? What are the reasons for, you know? And a lot of times I just remember my lines, and then when I get up on stage to say my lines, it's like it feels more natural for me. I don't really have a way that I become the character necessarily. I feel like I don't know.
Well, it was a part of the difficult role is to, she ends up shooting someone. Well, that's, ooh, you know, if you're a boy, yes, you play that, yeah, all the time. That's a natural thing. Girls don't do that very often. And so just even having to play that part was difficult, yeah, a little bit, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really hard to be able to, well, to have to shoot someone, and then it's like, what do you do after that? Like, how do you act that out afterwards after you've pretend shot someone? Like, how do you do? This is new for me as a character. Like, this character is very new for me because, you know, it's pretty strong. It's stronger than a lot of the other characters that I played as in other performances that we've done. So,
and I think part of the challenge of doing this play is that really we want to have a goal of raising $1,000 to help out with some of these families and to present to some of these families that are in such need. There's an Ethiopian woman who's a single parent with 8 kids, and she's working a minimum wage job and just trying to make a go out. We'd like to help bless her with some of that. So in order for us to do that, we have to evoke emotion in this mm-hmm. play. That means our characters have to be strong, and they have to know what they're doing and really become that part. So
as like a performance like this, it's not just we're doing it for fun anymore. We have a stronger reason to do this performance because
it's people's lives that,
yeah, I mean there's people out there that are going through strong sad situations, and this is how we want to support their needs in any way that we can, really.
Now, Janessa, this is a pretty intense role you've taken on. How did it impact you emotionally?
Honestly, it makes me feel sad because there's kids my age living in those countries having to go through things that no one should ever have to go through. And it really, like, opens my eyes, like, okay, I live in America. I've been blessed to be born in America and to live in America. But just because I live in America and I'm not going through some sad situation doesn't mean someone my age isn't. Like, so it just really opened my eyes because it just, like...
Well, before we had done this, had you thought about refugees at all?
No, I honestly haven't. This play really gave me a lot of insight and information on people that are refugees and that live in those countries.
Now, did it affect the way you look at the Israeli-Palestinian conflict at all? Did you have any ideas, preconceived ideas going into it and that were changed as a result of this play?
I didn't really know a lot about Israeli and Palestinian conflict. I didn't know a lot about it. I'd hear some stuff, but it's not something that I was hearing about every day until this play, until Mrs. Johnson was having us start this play, and that's when I started really hearing a lot about like the suicide bombings and stuff that were going on.
I think it raises, for my students, it's raised the level of awareness that, you know, you're listening to the news kind of here and there, and then, but every day there's a suicide bombing you're hearing about. It's not just Israel and Palestine, it's Somalia, it's just all over the world. There's all kinds of things going on every day that people are fearful of their lives, you know, and changing their perspective. So,
how many, approximately how many student actors are in the play?
In this one, we have 9.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're going to be staging it in the pack,
yes,
as I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. We just thought it would be more conducive to people in Astoria to come, or a broader audience, possibly a broader audience for us. So, what we're hoping.
Now, price of admission is?
It's free, and, you know, with a suggested donation of $10.
And all proceeds benefit?
Everything will, yeah, 100% will go to the ERCO organization. So,
it's the again, ERCO stands for?
For Immigration Refugee Community Outreach.
And
or organization, I'm sorry.
And it's Portland-based?
Yeah, it's Portland-based, and then it's the same for the website, is just ERCO.org, if anyone would like to look that up. So, and it's possible, if you can't make it there, to just do a donation through them. They have a donation site as well.
Now, what do you hope that people take away from this play?
It's a raised level of awareness, you know, just to bring the world smaller and just to say, hey, there's other people around. There's people around here that are your neighbors who are immigrants, maybe, or that are from, have endured situations that are hard, you know, or that we just think about people other than just ourselves and our everyday routine, and that maybe we'll just make the world a smaller place.
So again, the time and the place?
7:00 at the Performing Arts Center on 16th. So,
and
Avenue in Astoria. Yes.
All proceeds to benefit ERCA.
Yes.
Well, Jan Johnson and Janessa Cybulon, thank you so much for coming in and talking about.
You. And thank you for having
about
us.
Stone Girls Dreaming.
Okay. Our pleasure.
All right. And a few more announcements here. As Sati plays in the background. And as we said, the play Stone Girls Dreaming will be performed at 7 p.m. Saturday, May 14th. That's tomorrow night at the Astoria Performing Arts Center, 16th Street in Franklin. And Astoria admission is free, but suggested $10 donation to benefit ERCA and their work with refugees. The Astoria Visual Arts Artists in Residence Studies will be open from studios will be open from 5 to 8 p.m. tomorrow night, May 14th. It's going to be part of the monthly Astoria Arts Walk. And if you've never looked at an artist studio, it's very, very interesting to see how artists work. Honky Tonk Rebel is going to be performing 3 p.m. Sunday, May 15th at the Birkenfeld Theater at 75 South Nehalem in Klatskanai. If you haven't seen the newly renovated the Birkenfeld Theater yet, it really is a wonderful facility. I urge you to take that concert in. Tempo Gallery is hosting an exhibition featuring work by Alexander Myers. That's going to be 5 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, May 14th, at 1271 Commercial Street in Astoria, just up from the Liberty Theater. Miss Massive Snowflake, that's the name of the group, plays psychedelic rock and roll. That's going to be Sunday, May 15th at 8 p.m. at the Fort George Pub and Brewery here in Astoria. The Nehalem Valley All-Stars Dance Band is performing at 8 p.m. tomorrow evening at Gala at 1017 Marine Drive in Astoria. Country folk tradition songwriter Dan Weber will perform at the Peninsula Arts Center at 504 Pacific Avenue North in Long Beach. That'll be tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., May 14th. And Swan's Land, a photographic exhibition by Rich Bergman, will be on view. It's on view right now, May 13th through July 13th at the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum at 115 Southeast Lake Street in Ilwaco. And here's a bit of music from a group called Ben Yarrow. They're going to be playing at the Fort George Pub and Brewery on 5/22, May 22nd. Indie Acoustic Soul. Here's Ben Yarrow. Music of Ben Yarrow. They'll be playing the Fort George Pub and Brewery on the 22nd. And remember, tomorrow night at 7, Stone Girls Dreaming at the Performing Arts Center in Astoria at 7 p.m. All proceeds to benefit IRCA, refugee organization in Portland. Then, Sunday in the Park with Art from 2 to 5, catch Marco's address at 1 o'clock. And then on the 20th, there's a reception for Rain Magazine, the rollout, 6 o'clock up at 3rd floor Toller Hall Commons, Clatsop Community College.